This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Do you ever see a successful woman on your feed or in a magazine and think, wow, it must be nice to have it so easy? Well, think again. Behind that glossy cover or smiling face is a ton of hard work, countless failures, and endless learning experiences. I'm Rebecca Minkoff, and I'm here to tell you that success isn't a walk in the park. It takes grit, resilience, and a willingness to take risks. That's why I created Superwoman, a podcast that peels back the varnish and gets into the nitty-gritty of what it takes to make it as a woman in today's world. From luminaries and game changers to women you've never heard of but should, this podcast is here to inspire you to take your next leap, no matter how daunting it may seem. We'll explore the sacrifices these women have made, the highs and lows they've experienced, and the lessons they've learned along the way. So if you're ready to be inspired and learn from some of the most successful women out there, join me on Superwomen. Together, we'll uncover the stories behind the successes and prove that with hard work, determination, and a little bit of luck, anything is possible. Hey everyone, you're listening to Superwomen. Today's guest is Carla Welch, the incredible, world-renowned celebrity stylist and founder of The Period Company. Carla Welch is a Los Angeles-based stylist and has been declared one of the most powerful stylists by both The Hollywood Reporter and The New York Times. Her collaborations with renowned fashion designers, major magazines, and countless celebrities have brought her accolades across the globe. She's worked with celebrities such as Justin Bieber, Olivia Wilde, and many more. She's also the founder of The Period Company, which she founded to bring safe period products to all of those who need them. The Period Company advocates for the prioritization and normalization of menstrual health by creating affordable and sustainable products, all while giving transparency into its materials use so that individuals can make an informed choice about the product that best suits them. Carla Welch knows no bounds and has built this incredible company with a nonprofit ideology through a community program, where they work with organizations all over the world to make sure products get to those individuals who need them most. Over 80% of women who period experience period poverty. The Period Company products were designed to offer a cheaper and more affordable experience than pads and tampons, not to mention more sustainable by not filling up landfills with product or packaging. In this episode, we talk about what inspired her to launch this company and how she works with organizations all across the globe to be able to supply products to those who need the most. Carla, welcome to the podcast. It is truly an honor that you are here with me today. I'm so excited. You know, I've known you as a stylist forever, ever since I started. I was like, if I could just meet her, she'd be the one. But you started off as a sommelier.
Well, I started off as...
Let's go earlier than that.
Yeah. No, I had seen Tequila Sunrise with Michelle Pfeiffer and Kurt Russell, and I wanted to be front of house of a restaurant. I was like, oh my God. Oh, and Mel Gibson, of course, but like, I don't care about Mel Gibson.
I don't know why.
And I wonder why. And so I was like, oh my God, I want to run a restaurant. So I went to like cooking school to learn the back of the house. And then I went to food and beverage school. So I was like a maitre d', a waitress. I loved it so much. And then it's just part of the whole process of being in this very robust restaurant. I became a sommelier, but just like levels of learning, which is very indicative to who I am. I think I'm like, oh, I want to learn all the parts, the sums of everything.
And have you always been like that? Like even when you were little, were you like that?
I don't think so. When I was little, I was not like an ambitious kid. I was just a kid who was literally daydreaming and playing with my Barbies. Like I was the youngest of four, and my parents weren't like scheduled at all. Although all my siblings, I think they just retired or broke when they got to me, because all my siblings are like amazing athletes. They all played on teams. They all are like really academic. Well, yeah. I mean, yeah, they're pretty academically smart. And then I just came along and I was like, do, 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 do. And this is a party. You know, I was probably a little bit rotten when I was a teenager, but I was just more introverted and like solitary in a way, like really just did my own thing.
But obviously that led you to this incredible career, which happened, you know, it's not that often, right, where you see these people that have impact, global trends, you know, huge clients.
Yeah.
And yeah. So do you think that imagination or that quietness sort of led you into like a world builder, if you will?
Yeah, it's a marvel even to me, but it's so funny to look back, and I'm sure you feel the same way. I'm like, I'm in a cabin in the woods, everybody. That's why everything is very messy behind. I think that, you know, when you look at your career so far, I'm like, wow, how did this happen? But yeah, I think ultimately too, being a little bit of a loner and being introverted but very nurtured, right? I have youngest of four siblings, we're very close, but maybe that made me a little more brave to kind of just be like, oh, okay, I'm going to move to California. I mean, I also moved for love.
Yeah.
Because, you know, my husband came into my restaurant and I fell in love, and I just was like, well, fuck it, I'm going to move to California. So yeah, I think so. I think being bored and daydreaming is the most important gift you could give your kid, really, and give yourself. I mean, we don't really get to do it anymore, and I'm trying to get back to that idea. I read something amazing the other day, and this gentleman, he was retired, and he said, you know, being able to control your time is luxury. And I was like, well, ain't that the truth? So yeah,
it's the truth. I now force myself at night. I don't daydream, I night dream. Right before I go to bed, I'll take like those 10 minutes before I fall asleep to just dream.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've had summers of it, you know, of just sitting in the woods. And, you know, I grew up in a very, very small town. So you would naturally, I think, be bored a lot of times, what they call bored. But now I realize it wasn't necessarily bored. I was like super connected to the earth. So that's one of the greatest like gifts I've had in my life, is to be really connected to nature and be able to just let your mind wander. And yeah, that's where it all kind of happened for me. And I think what I have, and I know this is going to sound maybe a little privilege, but it's not, but I think I just kind of flowed. Like I wasn't that great at anything. That's ultimately what it came down to. But what I knew I was great at was being very, very hard worker. Like I never would say no to, I had a job at like a full on job after school every day from 14 on. And even before that at 11, I had a paper route that I had to do 3 times a week. So I wasn't smart or athletic or any of the things that I think make you be a standout in the traditional education system, but I could work really hard. And I loved that. Like I ultimately am like, I like being defined by my work because it fulfills me.
Yeah.
So it's not some thing where they're like work less. And I'm like, no, I like working.
Yeah. I feel like I very much identify with what you're saying, because I wasn't the typical smart either, but I also knew I could work hard.
Yeah.
And I had the creative side, which clearly you have, which I want to get to. So, you know, in my research, your now husband, you met him, you took the risk, you moved to California for love. Then he says, I really hate these stylists. You know, tell me that story of how that beginning happened.
Well, okay. So even backtrack, and it's just, you know, life is funny. So in Canada, there was an amazing television show called Fashion File.
I love Fashion File.
Oh, see, a lot of Americans don't know, but of course you would know, you know, with Tim Blaine.
I grew up what? Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
And that to me, you know, it's for some people, it's all written, mapped out, right? So I used to watch it and I was obsessed with it. Like I was obsessed with fashion as a child. Like my father had a menswear store. And when I say that, it was like a very small town store, but great. And I worked at the store my whole life. Like kind of left that out if I was like, I had a paper route, but I actually worked at my dad's store. like on the weekends as well as my other job. So I had all just this inherent love of fashion. And of course, like Tim introduced us to the supermodels and Marc Jacobs and Gianni Versace. So I was obsessed with fashion. So I think like the restaurant business was this little detour before I got back to what I always secretly wanted to do. But I didn't know that there was a place for me there, because like, I was like, you know, you think linearly, like you think, oh, I can't draw. So I couldn't never be a fashion designer. Or I don't even know what it entails. You know, I didn't know that, oh, I should make my way to New York City. Like I didn't know. But right around the time when I was running the restaurant, that's when I think you really started to know, like all of a sudden the editors started becoming a thing, and a little bit stylist, not yet in Hollywood, but you kind of, you saw that there was this job there. And, you know, I came down to the States, which was really, you know, amazing, but hard, because here I am, this person very defined by work. And all of a sudden I didn't have a job, and I couldn't work because I didn't have a green card. And I, you know, was newly married, and you know what that's like when you're in this new thing, and you're like, oh my God, I don't even have an identity anymore. So it was quite a crisis. And then I started actually assisting. I assisted like the West Coast editor of Vogue. Somehow I got introduced to her, one of the junior sitting editors there, and I helped out there. And then I helped these two British stylists. And, you know, I wasn't a great assistant, which is my nature, that I was like, I wanted to grab the bull by the horns sort of thing and do it myself. Which is quite bold now that I think about it, but maybe that's just, you know, time and place that you could actually literally do that. But yeah, Matthew had shoots, you know, and he had like small record packaging. And it's funny, I was like reading, you know, just comments once on Instagram. So it's like, you had a husband, he was a famous photographer. I'm just like, in what world? You know, it didn't, you know, of course I got a little step up, but of course everyone, it's just like, oh, people, you know what? You don't have to tear everybody else down. It just, trust me, it's, I'm like a 30-year success story and probably longer. So yeah. So Matthew needed a stylist for a job, and you know, the person he had kept fucking up, and he's like, well, I can't give you the job. And he's like, I was like, well, let me pitch myself to the label. And I did. And it kind of just went from there. And then I just really, again, like anything I have ever done in my life, I'm just not afraid to ask questions and ask for a little bit of help and ask how this works. Like I would go into, you know, the Bloomingdale's and say, hey, I've never done this before. I need to pull some clothes. Can you explain to me how this works? And then I think another one of my superstar skills is that I know how to hire really good people, and I know how to build really great teams. Which I'm only recognizing now as I tell, like, you know, a little bit of a story and I look back on my career. But, you know, I hired this amazing assistant, Ashley Sinclair, who I'm so grateful to, because she had been like a professional. She's a professional assistant, and she's an assistant costume designer now, and she's wonderful and has twins. And but she really, I learned from her. She was like, okay, this is the tailor we use, and these are all the elements that come together. So it was kind of incredible. And she was with me for years. And then, you know, my next assistant was with me for 10 years. And so I love having, you know, great people I work with and rely on and collaborate. But, you know, that's something that I'm proud of too, that I've been able to, you know, employ a lot of people for long periods of time and, you know, and then send them on their way to become, you know, stylists if they want or whatever they want to do. But, you know, I don't know if that answered it. So it wasn't overnight, but it was kind of exciting.
I mean, it never is overnight, right?
Never.
Everyone thinks it's going to be overnight. You just said 30 years. I'm on 18 years of overnight success. Right. So, it takes that hard and long work to like even just have that apparency.
Totally. And just the stress of your name on the door, right? Like, you know that. It's not your employee's name or your assistant's name. Ultimately, it all comes down to you. Which is a lot. It's a lot sometimes.
Yeah. Well, it comes down to you and then the people that are, you know, feeding their families on you, right? That are depending on you as well, which I know for me hit me many years ago. And I was like, there are 100 people depending on me for feeding their kids or whatever it was.
Yeah.
I was like, oh shit, that's not nothing.
It's not. That is a lot.
Yes. So I want to talk about you have this incredibly successful styling career. You've worked with Justin Bieber, St. Vincent, Camila Cabello. I mean, the names that you and people you and talent you've worked with are incredible. And then I watched you branch out and you did a collaboration and I felt like I had to have everything you came out with, whether it was with Hanes or Levi's or whatever it was. I was like, oh my God, I need that too. So I'd love to talk through your expansion of that and how you sort of thought through that. And then I want to talk about your latest baby, the Period Company.
So on the collab front, I feel like it's so interesting. And I know that probably a lot of females like kind of suffer from this thing where we get not, and it's not suffer, it's not the right word, but like we get really in the fashion industry and the entertainment industry, at least the creative world that I work in, you kind of get siloed. And so your wardrobe, your stylist, and you know, you're involved with all of this stuff of making an image and really helping your talent, in my case, celebrities, right? You know, and the list is, yeah, I mean, I probably have 25 clients right now and they're all wonderful. And I love working with all of them, but like, you're such a big part of their process and their of bringing their vision to your vision and their vision, but bringing their image to life. And I remember feeling, and sometimes I still feel this way where you're like, yeah, I'm bringing more to it than just a dress. And don't get me wrong, I love bringing the dresses. Like, I love a beautiful moment. It's so much fun. And like you said before, like, you shift a trend. It's so exciting. But I just realized, I was like, you know what? I need to be able to do more than just that. I can't just think that for the next 20 years, I can pull clothes and I have to branch.
Yeah.
And branch out. But it was more of like, it wasn't that I was a panic, like thinking, okay, I've got to do something else to prepare for the next step. It was more of that I felt, you know what? I have something creative inside of me. And maybe I never felt that I could ever admit that, like, or even call myself a creative, because I identified so much as a worker. Like, here are the tasks I'm going to do and get it done. But then I was like, and you know, being married to an artist too, who's a trained artist, right? Who went to school and is actually super talented. I didn't want to say, oh, I'm a creative too, because I, you know, can mix like a striped shirt with a pair of jeans. Like, but I felt like I had something else in me. And so I was like, you know what? I don't want to stay in that one lane. And I didn't want to call myself a designer or a creative director, but I wanted to do more. And so we started with, you know, this idea. I was making t-shirts for Justin, is exactly how the Hanes collab and the X Carla stuff started. I was like, oh, I'm going to make some t-shirts. And I was like, oh, I bet you like people might want to buy these t-shirts, because, you know, we would make these long t-shirts and everybody would make fun of them. And then like 6 months later, you'd see them on the floor at Barney's. So I was like, oh, I'm going to make something like affordable, so like most people can afford it. And oh, why don't I make myself a couple t-shirts? And that's how we launched. And I remember it just not being a thing for stylists to do. You know, it really, I think I was one of the real first kind of, I guess, I don't want to call myself a bigger stylist, but a bigger stylist who all of a sudden the brands were coming to me instead of the talent. And so it was so exciting, and it was a lot of work and a ton of mistakes, but just really helped build kind of this other world for me, you know. And it led to Levi's, and then it led to Express, and it led to like my own line of just being like a bit of a maker. And for me, one of the most kind of the parts I loved the most was really getting to tell and control the whole story, like from picking the models, from how it was shot, to like working on the shoots, not just as the person running in and fluffing the dress, but being like, oh, I want the hair like this and the makeup like that. It felt like everything that I had learned, again, like just back at the restaurant, like everything I'd learned from years, all of a sudden I got to put all in one place. And, you know, I got to do it with Matthew, and we still work together a ton just on consulting jobs now with brands that I work with. But yeah, it was so much fun. It was so fun to get to tell a different story of what I want it to do. You know, I guess it's like I got to do myself what I do for my clients.
Yeah.
But it was really like, I felt awesome. And I actually feel like I laid a a roadmap for other stylists to do. And for, because brands weren't looking at stylists to do, you know, of course, Rachel, so who like really created our, gave us such a huge platform, right? For styling.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she's the OG and she did it. She did a lot earlier, but like there hadn't been the next kind of generation. And now it's really like, you know, it's common for stylists to have stuff. And I don't need credit, but I like to be like, you know what? Actually, I did do it first. And I had so much fun doing it. And there's, you know, more coming. And on the flip side, you know, I also used it as a real tool for like social activism, because I'm obviously very politically active from a verbal point.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I have lots of behind the scenes stuff, but I use my, my, you know, Instagram platform in pretty big ways that a lot of people hadn't yet done. And, you know, all my collaborations had a real tie-in for, you know, whether like the Levi's one, Levi's ended up committing like $1 million to gun safety. And, you know, the Hanes had a total give back to, what did we do? I don't know if we did Black Lives Matter or Planned Parenthood, but, you know, everything had this activist component to it. So I got to leverage like whatever I had in order to like, you know, ultimately get money to people who needed it to do their work. Cause it's not like I'm like, you know, lobbying for gun laws, but I could certainly get money to people who are lobbying to gun, for gun laws. So it was like, it was so rewarding to create this model that hadn't been created. And then to also look at myself and say, yeah, I'm more than just that lane that I have been put in, which was so like, really, it's really fulfilling and exciting. And of course, there's tons of heartbreak and tons of like not sleeping at night and thinking, oh my God, did I really need to create a t-shirt brand? And now I have all these t-shirts and I've got to sell them and yikes. But yeah, in the end, it's still great.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
You said a couple of things that I want to touch on in that. And the first one is, you know, I have a very dear friend who, because she didn't go to culinary school, she'll never call herself a chef.
Right.
You know, you said you didn't go to school traditional route, so you didn't want to call yourself a creative. But then you went through this whole process of creating a, you know, a brand of yourself,
mm-hmm.
with all these creative offshoots of clothing, you know, all these other products. Having gone through that process, do you allow yourself to think of yourself in that way now as a creative director? Or then what do you think of yourself as?
I think I do, but I am very, and you know, it's that's so funny on your friend, but like also, you know, I would imagine that was a woman too, but like, and it's a certain generation of us, right? Whereas like, you know, a lot of,
yeah.
And there's the pendulum, right? When all of a sudden everybody had an iPhone and everyone's a photographer, it's like, mm-hmm. no, you still have to put in the work to get there. But what I think I am is that I'm really well-rounded and I'm skilled in a creative sense. Like I still am like, and I'm open to like learning. Like I don't walk out and say, yeah, I'm a creative director or I'm this and that, but I guess I am.
For sure.
Yeah. But you know what it is? Inside, I feel like good about it. So, and I'm, you know, older now and marginally wiser and, but more confident that I don't have to say, well, I do all these things.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I just know that I have, and that I have the skills of like, okay, wow. Yeah. I did set that business up, you know, with my partner, of course, with my husband who, you know, is the best support system. But yeah. Yeah. I know it's that, that's a thing, right?
It's definitely generational.
Yeah.
I felt like I didn't go to school, but I felt fine calling myself a designer. But then people, some designers are like, well, I'm not an artist. And I'm like, but it is an art. It's an art. You're creating something, you know?
Yes, of course.
So I was curious there.
Yes, I'm trying to answer it. Yeah, of course I do. I feel like, but you know what? I even look back like 5 years ago. And I was like, oh man, I bring so much more value now, even from 5 more years of experience. So I feel like in a way that I don't need like a traditional label, but I feel like I just build value with everything I do. And, you know, and value to myself, but then value to my, like, to my clients and to what I bring out to the world. Like, you know, so I guess it's that.
Yep. And so now the curious part, You have logical extensions of stylist to then products, and then you launch this new company. So I'd love to hear about what inspired you to launch it and, you know, what kind of got that started, and tell everyone listening what it is.
Yes. Talk about a detour.
Detour.
Yeah. But really talk about, for me, just where my purpose lies. And I really believe, and what's interesting, just to backtrack a tiny bit, or what's interesting to me, I don't know if it's interesting to literally anyone else, but I had this, I don't know if you know who Angela Manuel Davis is.
No.
The soul cycle. She was a soul cycle instructor back in the day. She isn't anymore. She's a coach. She's an athlete, but she happened to be an instructor at Soul Cycle. And when I say like happened, like Jay-Z and Beyonce were in the class every day.
Oh my God.
Like she was this like LA icon who is this motivational speaker in a way. And my life changed going to her. You know, all of a sudden I started in her little back row, and then years later I'm in her front row, and it doesn't matter what row you were in, but you went to church with her. Mm-hmm. And she really, you know, actually I give like most of my credit besides my husband to Angela, because she was like, don't be afraid to be great at something, and don't be afraid to have purpose, and to, like, she's like, your why needs to make you cry, and all these like isms that, you know, and you're also working harder than you've ever physically worked in your life under class, because she's like an Olympic athlete. But So I recommend any of your listeners to check her out. But she really just changed my brain in being like, in a way of like going for it and not living just like, oh yeah, no, you know, which is so like mothering of us and female of us to say, oh yeah, I'm fine. But no, she was like, no, go for it. And you've got this, and like, show your shine. And so somewhere along the lines, I was, you know, I have a son, but you know, my son, I have a trans son, and when Clem got his period, it was really early and 10. And he was at that time, you know, he hadn't told me yet that he was trans. And the period came, and oh my God, I was a disaster. I talked about it, of course, but I wasn't like prepared in any sort of way that I personally feel like I should have been. Mm-hmm. And it was just kind of like, here. And there was all these crazy emotions happening because I didn't recognize, you know, changes that were happening in Clem's life as well. But it was a disaster just logistically. Here is this 10-year-old with their period who's a child, and pads were a mess. It's not like you're going to give your 10-year-old a tampon. And I knew that there was period underwear in the market, but I was like, it's not good. It's so ridiculously expensive. Like, I don't know what to do. Of course I bought a couple pairs, but I'm like, this isn't even a great, this isn't a good plan. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, I was looking at my own period and I was like, oh man, this is so much waste I'm creating. Like, it was really bumming me out because, you know, period products don't go anywhere. They're all on the planet. The very first one your grandmother used is still here. Like, oh, it's
Lord.
And there's, oh my God, listen, we could talk for 20 hours on it. Just, it won't be a thrilling podcast because a lot of people aren't that interested in it. But when you actually break it down, you kind of think it's kind of amazing. And then, so essentially I was like, I need my child's period to be easier, because I also like saw myself losing my kid, like that they were going into this place of, and you know, there were other things, the trans part of it really contributing, but a lot of kids' light gets diminished when they get a period. And it's because we've been told our periods are shit by society for the last 1,000 years. Or not even 1,000 years, maybe 200 years. But so a light bulb went off in my head, just, and it was the exact same light bulb when I was like, oh, I should make t-shirts. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to make period underwear. And instead of it being $40, I'm going to make it like $10 so that anybody can have access to it. And that every mom can make sure their kid doesn't have a shitty period, because I am like fucking up here right now. And it is going to have consequences in a way that I don't want it to have consequences. And so I knew how to make stuff, right? Because I had already had all the fuck ups and successes of having a t-shirt company and manufacturing and bringing something to market. So I had learned again. So here I am again, like I'm on a wheel of repetitiveness in my life. I had learned all this stuff and I was like, okay, I know how to do it better now. And I know how to do it smarter. And I know exactly where I want to be with this. And then just pure kind of magic, I reconnected with a friend I had met a decade earlier. And she's this amazing marketing creative director, genius, this incredible writer. And she had just started bringing Impossible Meat to life. And she said, ooh, this project sounds really amazing. Because she's like, you can't just have a product. She's like, you've got to tell a story. And she's like, why don't we completely tell the story of periods not being a burden, but being a superpower like they are? And why don't we just completely change 300 years of people telling us we should hide it and be ashamed of it and not love it and actually encourage people to have a relationship with their period? And so that's what we did. And that's what we're doing. And it's kind of wild. And, you know, all of a sudden I could send my kid to school and they were not stressed out because they had a pair of underwear on. And then I was wearing them and I was like, wow, you know what? And I tease my mom all the time. I was like, my mom didn't even, I had to dig out pads under the bathroom sink. And the thing is, I'm the norm, right? Most of us didn't have great period experiences in our lives. And half of the planet gets a period. And how could this be? How could this, you know, it's just another form of the patriarchy. And then the advertising system's coming in just to make us feel really shitty. Because we all, majority of people felt shitty about their periods and it's just a joke. We shouldn't have to. So that's the big journey we are on. And it's kind of just amazing. And I feel like when Angela was always like, the why should make you cry. Like I was like, oh my God, that's my purpose in life, is to change the way the world periods. And actually then we were really starting as like this environmental brand, like let's get rid of the period waste, like 4 billion tons in the United States alone a year. That's gross. That's so much waste. But then what it happened was we launched and all of a sudden we were like, oh my God, 80% of the world, 80% of the people in the world who have a period don't have access to products. So we realized we had to really shift in a really fast way. And we created this mission vertical. And the mission isn't the right word because we don't want to seem like we're like these white saviors. But essentially what we do with our mission vertical is we get product in the hands of whoever needs it. And we do it at cost. So, you know, because we're still a small, small business. I don't have the resources to just give away underwear. Mm-hmm. But I could just do it where there's no value to anyone, right? And so, and we work with funders and we work with organizations all over the globe and we donate as well, but you know, we're just getting product out there in the world and we've done over 1 million pairs.
Holy shit.
Since we've won. Yeah. 3 years ago. And it's so funny because I had an advisor being, you know what, wait till you get further along and then you can create a fund, or wait till you get acquired or this and that. And I was like, well, what would be the point of it? Like, we really look at ourselves as a new next generation company that we don't have to like follow those old patterns and these old rules. Where I'm like, no, I'd rather just like, some people are like, how can you charge so little? It's like, it's easy. You just make less.
Right.
Like it's not, it isn't rocket science. Like I would rather make sure 10 people had period underwear than sell one pair at an inflated price. Like, come on, like this is an item that could end period poverty globally. Like, it's hard for people to realize. So period poverty, just for people listening, is when people don't have access to just any sort of period care. And what happens is, like, when I saw my kid just kind of getting lost,
you don't go to school,
right. You quit sports,
right.
You have this, the shame you carry, you know, it's in America alone, it's the first expense a household gives up before food, right? So can you imagine being a mom and you have a couple daughters and you can't afford to give them period care?
Right.
Can you imagine, like, Rebecca, what that would be like to, like, in our own lives, if you couldn't get, you just couldn't do it. So you use, and globally, you know, people are using like trash and, or they're using one pad their whole period. It's just, and it's an epidemic and it's a human rights crisis and it's so solvable. And, you know, there are huge conglomerate brands out there in the world who are like, we'll donate 1,000 pads. Well, 1,000 pads means sweet fuck all. Sorry, but it doesn't. They're garbage. But you know what? We can give someone for less than, like, at our cost. I mean, we can give someone for like $20, 5 pairs of underwear, and then their period's taken care of for like at least 5 years.
Yeah.
You know, longer. So, like, there's a way to end period poverty, and that's what we're going to do.
I love that. And I love that you are so focused on it. And, you know, I think that the effect that you're going to create and are creating has ripple effects that other people see and say, you know what, you know, hopefully other people get on board with this, because it is never talked about. There is so much shame associated with it.
Oh my God, for real.
I'm curious, what was one or more surprising things you learned? And then I realized we're going over what I told you time-wise, but what did you learn that shocked you in terms of, here you are, you know, not even saying styling is an easy job and launching products and being a designer or creative director is an easy job, but then you go into the business, right? And there's margins and sustainability and all the crap, right, that goes with that. Yeah. But what is something that shocked you in that process?
Oh, man. I mean, just the stress level. Like, you have to give it out to entrepreneurs, right? Like, you and people don't really have a clue. And I didn't have a clue. Just even understanding supply chain. Like, when COVID hit, right, all of a sudden you're like, oh, wow, we're all really dependent on each other to get something from, you know, beginning to end, to market. But I think, like, the one thing that surprised me in a good way is how willing people are to embrace an idea. Mm-hmm. Just like on period here, like how, and then on the flip side, how not willing they are. So it's like, and just how open people can be and willing to, like, talk about things. But then how on the flip side, people are like, why aren't you doing this, this, and this? And the people who are on your Instagram or your customer service who are, like, bitching at you have never run a business in their life and are never going to run a business in their life. And so that loud voice, you mean, you have to kill them with kindness, but I'll never complain to anybody about anything. I mean, unless it's, like, really worth complaining about, but I'm like, oh my God, you have to give people so much grace because it's so hard to run a business. And I think too, like, along the way of having these businesses is how quickly men overlook you. You're just like, wow, you really don't think. And I think this is, again, like where I talked before about just being siloed into one thing. Like, I remember I was talking about, like, what social media impact I could have, because I'm very grateful that, you know, I have so many clients that help amplify the projects I do. And some guy was like, "Ooh, how did this business get all of that?" And it's like, yeah, because I'm the CEO of the business. You know, like, you don't, sometimes that thing where you don't get taken seriously of, like, oh, you're still just that. I think it's, like, for me, still that challenge of still being a little siloed, that can be a little bit annoying. Like, I've created, like, multi-million dollar companies, but oh, you're still that red carpet stylist.
Right.
And it's totally like, okay. And I'm so thankful to get to talk so much about period with you. Cause a lot of people don't want to talk about periods. They're like, oh yeah, sure. Come on this TV show. Can you give us 6 fall trends? And I'm like, oh my God. Yeah. Turtlenecks, jeans, this and that, but they don't want to talk about periods. So for me, that's like, wow, you don't want to talk about a crisis that affects half the planet, but it's indicative of the mountain we're scaling, right? Or the mountain we're taking dynamite to.
Yeah.
Because we just have to kind of keep changing it. But I think that's, you know, the whole concept of not being recognized for kind of what you're doing can be annoying, I guess, but not surprising.
Yeah. It's like,
or that you have business acumen. Like, don't you find that too? Like, you're super creative, but that you've run these pretty remarkable businesses, right? And it's like, you're like, ah, yeah.
I think it's that we're supposed to be put into a mold, right? Yeah. And you're just supposed to be good at one thing. And yeah. I don't want to get all like, oh my God, and Barbie, when America said that, you know, monologue, but I like got teary, not to sound cheesy, but I was like, yes. We've been put into these impossible molds, you know?
No, 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 no. I mean, that monologue's a crowd pleaser because it's the truth.
Right, right. So I think it's amazing that you've broken the mold, you're out of the mold, and you're changing and making the world better for 50% of the population, which is exceptional. So,
you know, or even 100%, because the more men and boys know about periods, the better it's going to be for the people who period.
That's true. That's true. So where can people find out about where to buy products, where to order them, all the things and places to go?
You can go to period.co, so the word period.co, and we're actually at Walmart's nationwide.
Yeah. Nice. So before I let you go, there's 2 questions I ask all my guests.
Okay.
What is something we'd be surprised to know about you that maybe you haven't shared before? Besides the fact that you're in a cabin somewhere, you have the most glamorous life and you're in a cabin.
Yes.
Which I love. I love the dichotomy of that. But anything you feel comfortable sharing that would be surprising?
I mean, I think that like I'm painfully shy is something like that I constantly have to work on. And it's so hard in the fashion industry because it's so intimidating, and it's like, even though like, actually I think the fashion community is so incredible, and the more you get to know them, the better and amazing we are. But like that, I kind of always just felt like such an outsider, but that I'm okay with it. Maybe that's a little bit of my superpower, is being a little shy outsider. But yes, I'm pretty painfully shy. So that's one thing.
Would have never. Okay.
Yeah.
And then my last question is there a piece of advice you've either learned the hard way, or someone gave to you that was actually helpful that you'd like to pass on?
Oh my God. I hate hard lessons, but there are a lot of them. Oof. You know what? I feel like finding a mentor and building your community, like that's one problem for myself. I know, like, because I could be really isolating to my own self, and that I shied away from community. And I wish I hadn't, like, I wish I had a bigger community. And now, and thanks to social media, like, that's one thing I love about social media, is that you actually can have an authentic community if you put the work into it. But I feel like even your peer mentors are really important to have, and people you have that you can talk to. And one thing I am realizing and learning and being able to experience with the period company is that, you know, as we grow and you have more eyes on you, I am having access to mentors that are really being helpful to just to have a sounding board with. And I've been able to do it for people too, which is so wonderful. To like, sometimes you just need someone to vent to and to tell them what you're scared of. And I think not hiding what you're scared of is a really important thing, because there's people out there who have the answers. Like, oh my God, I don't know what to do. Like, the direct to consumer, the numbers are low. Okay. And then they might give you some advice of how to work around it. So, and it's really with anything, but you know, building your community and finding like that one person or a couple of people who you can really be vulnerable and share your great news with, but also share your fears with, is super important.
Great. Well, thank you again.
I thank you so much for having me.
I just wanted to thank you guys for listening to today's episode. I also want to ask you to rate and review the show wherever you listen to podcasts. I know it's a pain in the butt, but it actually helps with search and algorithms. So if you love this podcast, it is an easy way to get it more visible and out there. I also want you to follow me on Instagram at Rebecca Newkoff, at RM Superwomen, and be sure to check out my book, Fearless, The New Rules for Unlocking Creativity, Courage, and Success. Thank you again, and you will hear from me next week.